Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to the second episode of Tea with Tea. If you listened to our first episode, welcome back. If you didn't, a quick little bit about me. I am a talker. I love connecting with people, really learning about people, and kind of helping others see in themselves things that they couldn't see on their own. I was a human sexuality and theater major. My end game for a long time was to open up a counseling center and play therapy center to help children who've been sexually abused and adults with sexual dysfunction. Really connecting with people and learning how they tick is kind of a passion project for me. And that's why our very first guest interview is actually with my husband. And Eric is going to introduce himself in a second. We will actually talk a little bit about a dilemma he's been facing for a little bit and kind of get to know him a little more. So let's get to it. Eric, do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Eric, father of two, husband of one. I am a natural-born warrior. I get that from my grandmother. Thanks, Grams. I am a ENTJ, the executive. So I am very, very goal-oriented, on the point of being neurotic sometimes. I want the best for my family and for myself. And we are on this journey to explore our own thoughts and our own decisions.
And so the listeners can kind of get to know you. Why don't you tell them your favorite story to tell?
Over the years, this story has transformed into another story and another story, but my favorite story is to tell people how I met you. And some would be upset by it, but not us. So I get a phone call from a good friend of mine who I've met in school, and we're now study buddies. We're really into our mathematics courses that we're taking, and he likes to party. So I get a phone call from him. It's about 10:30 at night. The next day, I'm already trained to go for a long run for this charity that my friend is a part of. And I get this call. And this beautiful, attractive-sounding British woman answers the phone and says, hello. And immediately, my loins are set on fire. I can't contain myself, because it is the sexiest accent I've ever heard in my life. And she hits on me, and she starts to flirt with me. And I have to assume this is a setup, because no beautiful British woman would be calling me from my friend's number and actually wanting to talk to me and wanting to flirt with me, not knowing who I was. Crazy, right? So we flirt a little bit. I tell her I'm sorry I can't come out and go drink, although I was really tempted to. We exchange numbers over the phone, and that's that. Over the next few weeks, we're texting, we're talking on the phone. She's still British, and I'm still super attracted. And then one day I get a text message, and it says, hey, I just thought I should tell you I'm not actually British. Now, my first instinct was to cut and run. Not because I got fooled, but because she was American and not British. I had never been with a woman that was from England. So that added on to the attractive level. Although she was already super bold, super funny and intellectual, and there was chemistry right away. So needless to say, my feelings were a little hurt. I still wish I would have married a British woman, but we don't always get what we want, right?
Well, you also have to skip ahead, because after texting for a few weeks, we hadn't actually met, and we had made an agreement not to look each other up on social media. So the first time that we met was actually Halloween that year.
Yeah. And here I am. Man's man, right? Love motorcycles, love cars, love sports. And she tells me we're going to go to Montrose, which is the gayborhood. Now, we have a blast. I've never had so much fun. We pick up a homeless dude that requests to get a tattoo in the back of our car. I roll my ankle drunk on the dance floor.
We get separated from our group and we have to walk several blocks to find them.
It was a very interesting first encounter.
It was a fun-filled evening.
One to not be forgotten anytime soon.
So it was kind of like a baptism of fire, and really, we've just been together ever since.
Inseparable, really. Even now, look, we're doing our first podcast together. Who knows how this is going to turn out?
Describe briefly for everyone kind of what your dilemma is that you're facing.
Well, to try and narrow down my dilemma that you and I are currently discussing is I want to finish college. None of my family has ever completed college. Only one of my parents completed high school. So to me, now as an adult, education is huge. But my family is number one. So I'm having a rift between taking care of self and taking care of my family. Mm-hmm. And to what expense am I willing to sacrifice time with my family to complete my education?
Gotcha. Okay. So I guess a good follow-up question is, do you have to go to college? I know that you feel that you really want to go to college since neither of your parents have gone. But I guess part of your dilemma is that you don't know where you want to go, so you don't know if college is required, right?
Correct. To answer your question, no, I don't have to go to college. Right now, I'm making $85,000 a year. I drive a new truck. We have a nice house. Essentially, I should be happy, but unfortunately, I'm not. And maybe it's my perspective, maybe not, but I definitely know that the career choice that I have made thus far is not living up to what I wanted, to what I expected. Now, expectations can hinder, but I know that at the end of the day, I don't want to be drained of all emotion and drained of all energy and am unable to say, I had a good day today. I can't remember the last time that I said, I had a good day today.
I can, and it was when you were on paternity leave. Mm.
I had a lot of good days.
Yeah, that was the last time I heard you say anything about good days was paternity leave. So you weren't even working, like at work. We were just, you know, spending time together and really just kind of just spending time bouncing ideas off each other and, you know, talking about the future.
It was most definitely time for reflection.
Absolutely.
Which was much needed.
Absolutely. So we've answered the, do you have to go to college in a way that, close your eyes for a second and just visualize. In 5 years, what do you see yourself doing? Really, really flesh it out. Don't just be like, oh, I am.
The strange thing about being a parent before you really found yourself, because you and I became parents at the age of 23. Now, we've had essentially 5 years after high school to learn about ourselves through experience. A lot of that time I spent on the proverbial party bus. And I didn't do much as far as finding who I wanted to be. So who I've become as a human is a parent. So when I think about where I want to be in 5 years, the only thing that I can really think about, and I don't know if this is a positive or negative thing, but I can think about my children. I think I see Charlie at 10 years old, just getting into middle school or just ending elementary school, playing baseball. I see myself going to his games. I see myself wanting to just be that father that spends time with their children. So one of the difficult things is is I don't see the career. I see the family.
But that also helps, because then if that's what you see, then that's what you feel is most important. So with the career path you're on now, are you able to go to his games? Are you able to spend time with your children? Are you able to take them camping and do outdoorsy stuff that, you know, you've always wanted to take them on?
Maybe, maybe not. I do what my dad did when I was a parent, when he was a parent, and he didn't have time for that. So I would have to assume that I will never have time like that.
Okay, so then right off the bat, your current path is cannot.
It's unsustainable.
Yeah, it can't compute with what you want.
Correct. Okay. Cannot compute.
Okay, so then that's a good little segue into my next question of, you know, what's making your journey harder / better having kids? Because, yes, a lot of people on the path that they've taken, they did not have kids as early as we did. Mm-hmm. So what makes your journey...
Or unprepared as we did.
What makes your journey harder having kids, and what makes your journey better having kids?
As in my journey as a student, as a worker, as a father, I mean...
All of it, because it's all one journey. It's your journey.
It makes it really difficult. It makes it hard for me to be selfish. It makes it very hard for me to be selfish. And I think success, a lot of success is from being selfish, from hoarding your time and hoarding your energy and focusing that only on the idea that you want to achieve. And when you're a parent, you spend so much time
funneling,
stashing time away for people other than yourself. And when you do have time to yourself, and this is from my own experience, I just kind of want to be with them and with you.
Yeah, I mean, definitely being a parent means you're funneling a lot of energy into little people,
yeah,
and into those relationships.
And those little people tend to smell bad sometimes.
Well, that's their age. But, you know, so yes, it makes it hard for you to, you know, focus almost tunnel vision like on, you know, your path to self-improvement. But what about your journey is made better having had kids ahead of
you? It gives me something to work for. I mean, it shows me, first of all, my mortality, which makes me want to waste less and less time, because I know that I'm not here forever, and kind of the clock has started. Mm-hmm. You know, in X amount of years, I will have needed to save money in order to make my son's lives better. I will have needed to set up some sort of structure for them to give them guidance throughout the world. So it makes it less... it makes it harder to want to be complacent. So it definitely gives you a crazy drive, an immense need to succeed. And for me, it kind of manifests itself into pressure. And sometimes, you know, pressure will either make you stronger or it'll make you fold. And it's on how you react to that.
Absolutely. And kind of how you, it's all, I guess, in the basis of you. Some people are built for pressure, and other people are built to fold, like you said. So what do you think is keeping you from committing to a degree path or a career path?
A lot of it is I have no invested interest in any one subject or any one topic. So that can help and hinder me in the way that I can start new and fresh from whatever I want, or I really just am unable to commit because I don't know in 2 years if I'll love it, you know? But I guess it's not about loving things. It's just about working towards setting a goal and working towards it.
I mean,
which I have been unable to do so far.
Even if you love a career path, you still have to do the work. You still have to put work in. So even if you love your job or you make what you love a job, it's still a job. Mm-hmm. It's still work.
Right.
In fact, some people advise against, oh, make your passions your job, because then there's nothing for your self-care. There's no separation of what you love and what gives you joy.
And it won't be a passion anymore.
Yes. It's like just kind of grinding it down. Okay, so with not being able to commit to any one path because you don't feel like you have a vested interest in anything, why do you think that is?
Why do I not have a vested interest in one thing at this point? Because I've always been so money driven to want these material objects. Mm-hmm. These cars, these motorcycles, these shoes, these watches, you know, and it's kind of taken me away from substance in one subject. But after I came back from California, after I lived in California, I realized the need for intense knowledge on one subject. And that's why I wanted to go back to school. Because in my own mind, I didn't want to be a jack of all trades and master of none. I kind of wanted to be a master of one thing. And then once mastered that, have the, you know, the discipline and wherewithal to now try and master other things. But first, actually stick to one thing and master it.
And did you have any inclinations towards that one thing?
Based off of my outside experiences and discussions with people, yes. Engineering interested me because I have a love for math and science and critical thinking and analytical thinking. Those facets of that industry I really, really enjoy and feel that I would succeed at. But then I also think about, I've done sales. I don't want sales. Sales is draining. It's too emotionally and spiritually draining. I don't want that. But I do love interacting with people, and that's one of the reasons why healthcare has always been something that I've wanted to really dive into deeper.
So why do you not consider, you know, degree paths related to those two?
I have physical therapy, pharmacy, mechanical engineering, chemical engineering. I've thought about doing all those. However, I've never started. I've thought about a lot of stuff, but I've never started.
And, I mean, what are you afraid of? What do you feel that is keeping you from starting?
Excuses, maybe a fear of commitment, fear of failure, definitely, to be honest about all of that.
Do you feel that you wouldn't be able to do it, like you wouldn't be able to complete the degree or see it through?
No, I know that once I got fixated on one thing and made it my priority, I would succeed at it. I have no doubt in my mind that I would succeed at it.
So what are some of the excuses that are keeping you from doing it?
One of them is putting myself first and not wanting or not being able to provide, not being able to be the breadwinner and provide a certain level of life for you. For Charlie, for Alex, a fear of getting myself into debt, depending on what course. I mean, you know, pharmacy school, you're looking at seven years of school, you know.
And then physical therapy would be
somewhere around the same.
About the same, right? Engineering would be roughly the same. So you're looking at just a chunk of the next 5-6 years at least, right?
Right.
And I'm like you mentioned earlier, you know, wanting to be there for your sons, but you know, there's several sayings, you know, when it comes to parenting adages, you know, there's the, oh, you know, You can love your kids to the moon, but they cannot be your first priority. You have to be your first priority because you can't give to someone else if you have nothing to give.
Right. And that's kind of one of the driving factors of doing these technical fields that may take longer in school, but would have definitely a substantial payout. Financially and, you know, just career rewarding wise, because when in 18 years, you know, we'll still have quite a time until we retire. We will have time to invest in our career, depending on how our children behave, you know, and what path they choose.
Right, right.
You know, but yeah, I definitely, and that's one thing that I keep trying to keep in the back of my mind, is just that. Because my mom and my dad, they don't have friends. They don't have that group of people that are close. You know, they're kind of recluse. Not that anything's wrong with that, but that's just not, I want to have a lot of interaction with family and friends. I would like that. And, what was I saying? What are we talking about?
I think we were talking about, you know, how you can't put your kids first. You have to make yourself first.
Correct. Correct. I want that. I don't want them to leave. For let's say they go to college or they go off and they live in another city to find themselves. I don't want to have that empty nest syndrome to where we're like, okay, now what do we do? You know, you're the soccer mom. I'm the soccer dad. That's all we're doing. We got minivans. Everything's been based around our children. And then they leave. And where are we at?
So keeping that in mind, do you feel that that would help be fuel for you to finally commit and move forward with a degree or whatever direction your self-improvement goes in?
Right.
I mean, do you have any other possible options in your mind? Like if you don't go to college, what are some other things you can do? Because you've already said that this current career path is not sustainable. You know, you run the risk of burning out at any moment in a fiery flame.
Yeah.
So what other ideas or things do you have that you could possibly pursue if you decide, okay, college, while great, is not in the cards for me?
It would definitely be a trade of some sort. You working with my hands, maybe deciding to do an apprenticeship of some sort. But for me, really, my main goal is college. That's what I do want, is college. I want to finish my degree.
In?
I can't answer that just yet.
So you know that you want to go to college, but you don't know what you want to go to college for.
Yeah.
Okay, so what out of these paths, obviously, you know, you've laid out a couple technical paths or a possible apprenticeship if you changed your mind about college. What do you feel would be something that you could leave a legacy for your sons? Obviously, we don't necessarily mean, oh, you know, a business that they can inherit from you. But what path would you take that would make you feel proud to have your sons go, this is what my dad does?
And that's a question that I have thought about a lot. That's a big question. Because when I was thinking about becoming a pilot, I would always think that I would be the cool dad, but then I'd also be the dad that wasn't there a lot. So that was automatically ruled out. But I definitely, if I could say anything, I would say that they would be proud that I was an engineer, somebody that created things and kind of channeled and made a bridge from the technical to the real world.
So what's something that you're really into this week? Like, you know, music-wise, book-wise, show-wise, what are you kind of fanning about right now?
This week, I am really into
motivational podcasts. And I think it's because we are definitely getting into the podcast environment here at home, working on our own. But one of my new favorites is a podcast by Tim Ferriss. It's called A Tribe of Mentors, mm-hmm. where he interviews, well, actually he sends out a list of, I believe, 10 to 11 questions to 130 of the greatest minds in his opinion. So they're writers, authors, entrepreneurs, doctors, creatives, everyone that you can think of that has a successful story. He wants to know how they got to that point. And simple questions from what is the best buy under $100 to what is your most quirky trait or
habit. I've listened to that with you. I think there were even questions like, what are bits of advice that you would tell someone to disregard and things like that.
So, exactly.
Yeah, it's definitely some really off the wall questions, yeah. But so far I've heard really insightful and really interesting questions on that. Yeah. So
one of the things that I really like the most about that podcast is he has a section where he talks about how to say no. And that's one of my biggest problems is I'm an adult child of divorce. ACOD is the acronym. And I am a true people pleaser. I tried to please everybody all at once, and I would have to say that's my downfall. And it kind of helps me be a little bit selfish with my decisions.
And that is something that, I mean, everyone could stand to be a little more selfish. Obviously not the really selfish, awful people, but, you know, self-care is something that a lot of people shelve because they're so worried about doing things for others or that they don't have enough time. So what do you do for self-care?
I have a friend, his name is Ronald Curligon, and his greatest motto that he taught me was when you're feeling overwhelmed and when you're feeling drained and as if you have not much else to give, isolate and reevaluate. I like to get into a room, I like to dive into a book or even into my own thoughts and really just mull things over and kind of play out what I've done this week, what I've done this month, what I've done this year. Am I on track? Am I meeting the goals? Am I on track to meet the goals? Just to really evaluate, am I being efficient with my time? And am I progressing the way that I want to progress? Or am I giving too much of myself away and not focusing on what's most important?
Right. Because if you don't recharge yourself, then you run out of things to give. So in your reflections, did you like plan your future as a kid? Like by this age, I want to do this, by that age, I want to do that. And kind of when you reflect, compare where you are versus your plan?
Absolutely not. I had very little planning. Honestly, my senior year in high school, only thing I was really concerned about was senior skip day. I did not put in any applications for a four-year uni. I knew I was going to go to community college. I was probably the opposite of a overachiever. And that is one of the reasons now why I pride myself on my work ethic and my habits, because I know where I've come from and how my mind frame was to how I am now, and that helps me continually motivate myself.
Well, that's good. That's good that you can kind of see the path that you've taken there, especially planning-wise. Because now would you say you're more of a planner now?
Big time. I'm very, very, very anal when it comes to planning. I kind of have to have a plan for everything. And as you can attest, I am an overthinker, overanalyzer. I'm big on that. So whereas I didn't have a plan for 5 years, I didn't know if I wanted to be an engineer or a doctor. It kind of took me hitting rock bottom to know that I wanted something better for myself. And that's when I kind of came up with the plans.
And so what do you feel are your next steps in your plans?
To really dive in to into today's society and culture. I really want to finish school. That's my number one goal, is to finish college. And I've definitely become a STEM thinker, big time. Although I love arts, I love the left brain thinkers, I love creatives, my mind has grown to work, of course, when I'm not listening to music, to think analytically in terms of problem solving. And I find myself thriving in science and mathematics. So I really want to just dive into those worlds, the science and the mathematics world, arithmetic, because my ENTJ personality type thrives in that.
Yes. And I almost wonder if what you would have tested as when you were younger, because like you said, that was a completely different ball game then versus now you.
I'm pretty sure that I would have tested as a career pothead in high school.
I don't think that there's an MBTI typing for that. But it would definitely start with an E, I feel.
And it would have been created in California or Colorado. That's for sure.
And that wraps up our very first guest interview on Tea with Tea. Thank you so much to Eric for joining us and kind of letting us peek inside his mind. Everyone, your assignment this week is to take a Myers-Briggs test, also known as an MBTI test. Find out your typing and let us know on Instagram or Twitter at T and Turquoise, all of it spelled out as usual. The link to all of that will also be in our show notes. And if you like what we're doing so far, please subscribe to our podcast. That way you can be the first to listen to all of our episodes when they come out. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. And if you like what we're doing and you want to support us in another way besides just subscribing and sharing with your friends, you can also buy us a tea. The link will be in the show notes. It's also in our Instagram bio link. So we will see you guys next week. Thanks for joining us.